All right, so we were talking about chanting japa last night, 16 rounds. And I think we finished where Prabhupada told Brahmananda that he was experimenting. So that was how he arrived at the figure of 16. So again, Prabhupada mentioned this to us also a couple of times in classes. On September 17th, 1976, Prabhupada was in Vrindavan. So he was giving a class. He explained that chanting a certain fixed number of rounds every day is one of the rules governing success. He said that Haridas Thakur had chanted 3 lakhs of names a day, but Rupa Goswami was chanting less because he was writing books, although he still did a fixed number. Similarly, he said, we must have some numerical strength, and we have minimized. I know that you are coming from a different source, so according to time, according to circumstances. But even then, there's no limit. You can chant more than 1600 times. But practically we see that chanting 16 rounds becomes difficult. So don't try to imitate, but do it properly, what is advised by your spiritual master, without any offense. That mantra will save you from the dangers of Maya. That is a fact. So, Prabhupada stuck to 16 rounds, and even with people that weren't his initiated disciples, if they asked him how many rounds they should chant, he stuck with that same figure. One example of that was when a famous tennis player, Peter Burwash, came to see Prabhupada when he was in Los Angeles in June of 1976. Peter was an interesting personality, actually, because he took up Krishna consciousness very seriously, because he wasn't like one of the super famous personalities in the tennis circuit, but he was well known. He was a professional tennis player, and he had a whole organization worldwide for teaching people tennis, a tennis coaching organization. So he had people in all the major hotels, all different places around the world. Anybody that booked into the hotel, then they could hire one of Peter Burwash's tennis coaches and learn how to play tennis nicely. So he came with some of his tennis player coaches to see Srila Prabhupada on the 6th of June. So he told Prabhupada that the men that he signs up as staff coaches must follow the four regulative principles. If they break them, then they are released and they cannot rejoin. This is actually written into their contracts. They try to preach, although not too directly, and if somebody shows a favorable attitude, then they try to nurture it. A few of them who are tuned into the more spiritual side of things are gradually introduced to the philosophy if they show some inclination. He said the biggest difficulty is the long hours that they work. A regimen of 16 or 18 hours a day is this workday standard, so it makes it difficult for them to chant 16 rounds a day. He asked Prabhupada if it was all right just to chant only 8 or 10 rounds. Prabhupada appreciated this sincerity and was very friendly to them, but he held firm to the standard of 16. The meeting was very congenial, and Prabhupada thanked them for their efforts and encouraged them to continue. So even with somebody, I'm going to start sneezing if I wear this much longer. Prabhupada, still, even though he was, you know, this is a person who's not initiated, but Prabhupada wouldn't change from 16. He told him, no, that's our standard, you have to chant 16. For years afterwards, Peter, because at that time he was only chanting 8 rounds at that time, and he maintained that for a long time afterwards. Nowadays, I believe he does chant his 16 rounds every day. We see him sometimes, he comes to Vrindavan, and he's raised a lot of money for the Food for Life program that's been conducted there in Vrindavan for quite a few years. So anyway, that was it. Once Prabhupada got down to 16 rounds, there was no compromise with that. It had to be that. Again, Prabhupada mentioned, you know, this adjustment that he had made. This was on April the 1st, 1976, After the Gaur Purnima festival in Mayapur, then Prabhupada came over to the Vrindavan side for that second leg of it. So most of the devotees that were there, of course, they were, there was probably about 500 Western devotees, and many of them were Sankirtan devotees. So in the class, Prabhupada read from the Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 9, Verse 46, wherein Prahlad Maharaj speaks about Mona, or the vow of silence. In India, even today, people sometimes practice Mona, although it's generally not for spiritual purposes, and neither is it strictly followed, because the practitioner often communicates with a small blackboard and chalk, or a pencil and paper. So we actually had a couple of occasions where we did have these sadhus that turned up, came to see Prabhupada. They were doing Mona, but the Mona was that if they wanted to say something, they'd just write it down on, you know, a blackboard, hold it up, you'd have to read it, and then they get the reply, and then they rub that out and write their answer down on the blackboard like this. So in that way then, Prabhupada said, there's actually no question of not talking. One must talk. But that talk should only be about Krishna. If all we talk about is mundane activities, then he said we should practice Mona. But for one who is practicing Krishna consciousness, there is never enough to be said. He told us, Rupa Goswami says, I've only got one tongue and two ears. So how can I enjoy or serve Hare Krishna with only one tongue and two ears? If I had millions of ears and trillions of tongues, then it would be possible. So he's feeling like that. So he's expecting so many ears and so many tongues to chant Hare Krishna mantra. Then he added, with perhaps a touch of irony, a comment relating to our present state of affairs. So far we are concerned, conditioned soul, even 16 rounds becomes very, very difficult job for us because we are practiced to talk all nonsense. We cannot find out a little time, say 2 hours, for chanting Hare Krishna, but we can find out 24 hours for talking nonsense. Therefore, those who cannot chant Hare Krishna mantra, he should stop his talking. That is called Mona. Don't talk anymore. Better remain silent. So this is recommendation of Prahlad Maharaj. He concluded the class by saying that nowadays nobody can follow the strict practices mentioned in the scriptures. Therefore, he said, we should simply rely on the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So, Prabhupada's standard was not less than 16. And if people wanted to chant more than 16, then they could do that. Actually, when Prabhupada gave sannyas to Lokanath Maharaj, Sridhar Maharaj, and Prituputra Maharaj in December of 75... that was one of the things that he mentioned in his talk when he awarded them sannyas, that as sannyasis you can chant more than 16 rounds. So he approved that. But sometimes that idea of chanting 16 rounds became a contentious issue. And there was one very prominent situation that occurred in mid to late 1976, and that was with Nittai Das. Nittai had been Prabhupada's personal servant. He was a bit of a Sanskrit scholar. He had come with Prabhupada on Prabhupada's party when Prabhupada had gone to Vrindavan for the Janmashtami celebrations in 1975. When Prabhupada left there, Nittai stayed behind, and he was supposed to help establish the Gurukul in Vrindavan. And also, you know, some of the deity worship standards. So, in mid-76, when Prabhupada was on tour, he got some letter indicating that Nittai wasn't attending any of the classes. He wasn't apparently very happy with the standard of the classes in Krishna Balaram Mandir, and he was going outside to hear from, you know, this Goswami and that Goswami like this. So Prabhupada had written a letter saying that if you don't like the standard of the classes, then you can give another one. But strictly, he said, nobody can go outside for hearing from others. So anyway, apparently Nittai ignored that. Then when Prabhupada arrived back in Bombay on August the 13th. That was, you know, coming back from the last world tour. Then Nittai turned up. He was there. He came to see Prabhupada the next day. And at the time when I saw him, I thought, you know, he looked ill. I knew there was something wrong with him. He had no effulgence. He looked pale and, you know, kind of sickly. And I actually asked him, are you all right? And he said, no, I'm fine. Like this. Anyway, he had some discussion with Srila Prabhupada about Vrindavan. And also at that point, of course, the Bombay temple was just being constructed. And Prabhupada had a plan to establish a library there. So in the library, he wanted all the works, you know, of course, our previous acharyas. He wanted Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, like that. Even he said Sankaracharya's works could be put in there. Which was, I found interesting, of course. You know, we've been warned not to hear from the Mayavadis. In Chaitanya Charitamrita it says that even if you're a Mahabhagwat, if you hear the philosophy of the Mayavadis, you can fall down. So I was a little puzzled, you know, why Prabhupada wanted Shankaracharya's works in there. And Prabhupada said, no, he said, we can study them so that we can learn how to know what their philosophy is and we can learn how to defeat them. So anyway, Nittai was given 4,000 rupees to buy, you know, the initial books for this library. So off he went. That was, you know, about August the 15th. Then about 2.5 weeks later, Prabhupada was back up in Vrindavan. So on September the 4th then, there seems to be a major problem with Nittai Das, Prabhupada's former servant. He was supposed to be helping establish the Gurukul here as well as the deity worship. But he has not been seen since visiting Prabhupada in Bombay 2 weeks ago. Rupa Vilas Das, who was here, who has been here about 6 months and who was heading up the Gurukul, came to see Prabhupada in the evening to discuss what to do. Prabhupada questioned Rupa Vilas about Nittai's propensities. His approach was that if Nittai was not happy with his service, then that could be adjusted to something that he liked to do. Rupa Vilas said Nittai was a good scholar and he liked to study languages and to write, but he was not a very effective teacher. Prabhupada asked if he had written anything, and when Rupa Vilas said he had done some BTG articles, Prabhupada said, so then why does he not write? If he has got a taste for something particular, then he can do that. But nobody knows where he is. He shook his head in disapproval and disappointment. He is not fixed up. He wanted to take charge of the deity worship, and then he went away. It was mentioned by Gopal Krishna and Harikesh Maharaj that he had left with the 4,000 rupees, and now he was said to be living in Radhakund. Prabhupada was a little disgusted. Just see. One of the devotees added, well, one boy came from Bombay, and he told me that Nittai had said, if I leave, I have to go. Prabhupada shook his head. Then he's at Radhakund. He's taken 4,000 rupees and he's gone to Radhakund. This is his taste. Sit idly and become famous as a very good scholar. Rupa Vilas said that Nittai didn't attend any classes, nor even teach very often. Prabhupada curled his lips a little in dissatisfaction. Restless, that's all. Mind not fixed up. Restless. Now, what will he do with that 4,000 rupees? Oh, it is a very good program. If I get some thousands of rupees and sit down in Radhakund and eat, oh, that is a very good idea. Gopal Krishna said that he thought that they could find him. But Prabhupada, however, said that it wasn't a question of finding him. That is not difficult. But what is his mentality? Why has he gone to Radhakund if he was teaching here? You cannot rely upon him. So that was the first discussion that we had about Nittai's situation. And it seemed apparent that he had actually left ISKCON. You know, he just decided to quit. So then on September the 9th then, more stuff was coming out about Nittai. So complaints about Nittai Das have been increasing daily. Apparently he's been telling the devotees that it is not possible to go back to Godhead in this life unless one chants 100,000 names of Krishna, or about 64 rounds every day. He has been claiming that if one only chants 16 rounds, it will take many births. Many devotees are affected by this nonsense, which Nittai got from some advanced devotee in Govardhan. Prabhupada said that he has become a Sahajya. He pointed out that at initiation we agree to chant not less than 16 rounds. We are not saying only 16 rounds, Prabhupada said. You can chant more if you want, 64. But actually you are not capable of chanting 64, 100,000 names a day. That is not possible for you. So then 2 days later, then more information came, more specific information. Gopal Krishna Prabhu had met Yogananda Das, who has been renting a small house in Govardhan with Nittai. Yogananda told him that for the last few weeks he had not seen Nittai. Then just today, by chance, he saw Nittai sitting in a train at the Mathura railway station. Nittai suddenly pulled out the 4,000 rupees that he had been given in Bombay, Jai Shri Shri Radha Govinda Ki Jai, to purchase books for the library, and he had asked Yogananda to return it to the temple. When Yogananda asked him what is he going to do, Nittai said, "Now I'm just going to Jaipur to say goodbye to Govinda." Because Radha Govinda are the presiding deities of Jaipur. "Then I'm going to Nabadweep, and then I'll return to America because my wife has sent me a ticket." Yogananda affirmed that Nittai has indeed left ISKCON. When Prabhupada heard this news, he shook his head in disapproval. Then, a couple of days later, on September the 12th, there was more discussion on Nittai's departure again today. Prabhupada expressed strong displeasure about his propaganda that unless you chant 64 rounds a day, daily, you cannot go back to Godhead in this life. "We don't mind if you chant 64 rounds," Prabhupada said. "That is good if you can do it. I never said only 16. 16 is the minimum. You must do that. But the difficulty is that some of them cannot even do 16. So how they'll do 64? If you can do 64, then do it. But why do you have to go to New York to chant 64? Yeah. Why are you leaving Vrindavan? Vrindavan is the best place to chant 64 rounds. But you are going to Jaipur to say goodbye to Govindaji. You rascal, get out. You cannot stay here. That is Govindaji. Just to save this rascal from going to hell by his bad association, Krishna is forcing him to leave. You cannot stay here. Get out. It is by Krishna's mercy that he is made to leave and give back the 4,000 rupees. 1 minute later, he would have been missed on the railway station and he would have kept that money. It was Krishna's arrangement." So he was thinking that he was going to say, you know, goodbye to Govinda, and Prabhupada said that Govinda was thinking, "Now get out. You cannot stay here like this." So, September the 14th, 2 more days later, Prabhupada actually received a letter directly from Nittai himself. Up until that point, no direct communication had come. So he sent a letter today explaining his reasons for leaving ISKCON. At first, Harikesh Maharaj didn't want to read the letter to Prabhupada because it was too offensive. But when Hasaduddha Maharaj saw it, he insisted that it should be read out so that we could hear Prabhupada's rebuttals to his points. So this afternoon, after Prabhupada's nap, we went into his room and sat before him. Prabhupada was grave as Harikesh read out the letter. He responded point by point, not to dictate a reply as he normally does, but simply for our benefit. Nittai began by disclaiming the authenticity of our disciplic line. He cited Radharaman Charan Das Babaji, a contemporary of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who claimed that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was never initiated by Srila Gaurkishore. "It was well known that Gaurkishore never had any disciples," he wrote. Prabhupada responded that Radharaman Charan Das Babaji was a Kanista Adhikari, whom Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had strongly criticized for advertising himself as a great preacher without his having any actual knowledge of the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. Because he's the Babaji who introduced the Nittai Gaur Radhishyam Japa Hare Krishna Hare Ram chanting. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had been very strongly opposed to that person, and in reply that he had tried to criticize Srila Bhaktisiddhanta by saying that he was never initiated. I'll talk more on that in a minute. Nittai went on to say that he now doubted ISKCON's teachings. They are just the opposite to or a misrepresentation of what is actually in the Shastra. As an example, he offered a quote from Chaitanya Bhagwat, where Lord Chaitanya says that one cannot become one of his associates unless one chants 1 lakh of names daily. Prabhupada's reply was practical. If you take all of the so-called Goswamis, Babajis and Mahatmas in the whole of the Vrindavan area all together, they have not advanced Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement 1 inch. Then Nittai's next point was that Srila Haridas Thakur was the Namacharya. Since he chanted 3 lakhs of names a day, we either have to imitate that or keep it as our goal. Nittai asserted that if we chant at least 1 lakh of names daily, then Krishna will automatically give us prema. But Prabhupada disagreed. He said Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had condemned the idea of sitting down and chanting in one place as merely a cheating process adopted by unscrupulous persons desiring of obtaining name and fame as a so-called advanced devotee. He added that the idea that Krishna will automatically give prema is karma mimamsa philosophy. Krishna is not obligated to give prema to anybody, no matter how many rounds that he chants. Incredibly, at the end of Nittai's letter, he had the audacity and hypocrisy to tell Srila Prabhupada that he was now going out to seek the shelter of some other great Mahatma in whom I can place greater faith. And he asked for his blessings so that I may advance more and more. Prabhupada's response was very strong. Yes, I bless you, you shall never advance. He then dictated a telegram to be sent to all the GBCs. Please let it be known that Nittai has become a venomous serpent. Be careful of him. Your ever well wisher, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. So, a few points on that letter there. The first thing about whether Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was initiated. Well, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was opposed to many of the Babajis that were living in Vrindavan because of their bogus practices, and especially this Radharamantaram, who had invented this so-called Mahamantra. So, you know, there'd been some conflict between them. So in retaliation, the Babajis were putting it out that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had never been initiated. Of course, he says there, it's well known that Gaurakishore never had any disciples. So they never had any proof, actually, that he had not been initiated. They just said it was well known. It's one of those things everybody knows. But of course, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, he used to chant alone most of the time. He would go off and, you know, he would sit near the latrines or whatever so that people wouldn't come disturb him when he was chanting. So most of the time, you know, he was by himself. So how do they know that he never initiated anybody? Yeah, they weren't there to see whether he did or he didn't, but it was well known. You know, it's one of those things everybody knows. But according to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he had gone 3 times to see Gaurakishore Das Babaji on the advice of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was like a spiritual mentor of Gaurakishore. And he was, you know, told, now you go and get initiation from him. And 3 times he went, 3 times he was refused. Then on the last time, then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati threatened to jump into the river, and he was serious. It wasn't just an idle threat. That if I can't fulfill this instruction of my father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and if you won't accept me as my one of your disciples, then I have no reason to live any further. And then at that point, then Gaurakishore Das Babaji said, all right, yes, you're serious. And then he actually initiated him. Now, why would Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati have invented that story? There's no advantage for him to do that. If he wanted an endorsement for going out to preach, there were many Babajis that, you know, or saintly persons who would have gladly accepted him as their initiated disciple. He was already well known. He was a great scholar, learned person. And it would have brought prestige to anybody to have such a disciple. So Gaukishore Das Babaji, you know, he had no... Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had no real reason, you know, for inventing that story. So we either... It gets down to you either believe Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati or you believe, you know, somebody like Radharaman Charan, who, you know, concocted his own mantra and didn't really know the philosophy and was in conflict with him. So, you know, this rascal Nittai, he chose to believe, you know, the Babajis rather than believe Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And so he rejected him. He had no real grounds to do that. And I actually read some stuff that he had put. He has his own website, some kind of web page that he has. And not long ago, a few years ago, I read, you know, Nittai's explanation of why he had rejected Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And he admitted that actually there's no actual proof, you know, that Bhaktisiddhanta was not initiated, but he just chose to believe that. So what can you do? You know, he's a rascal. Now then, the next thing there about, all the, you know, this thing about chanting 64 rounds, Lord Chaitanya doesn't accept one as his associates, one of his associates, unless you chant 64 rounds. Prabhupada's reply was very, you know, to the point. If you're actually an associate of Lord Chaitanya, then what have you done for Lord Chaitanya's movement? That's the actual proof. Yeah, you want to sit down in Vrindavan and chant 64 rounds and claim to be an associate of Lord Chaitanya, but where is the proof that you're an associate? What have you done? Prativi Chaya Chajito Nagarati Gram. Yeah, what have you done for fulfilling Lord Chaitanya's mission? So, as he said, you can take all the Babajis and Goswamis of the whole Vrindavan area, you'll see they haven't done anything to advance Lord Chaitanya's movement. So who is actually, whereas he said we are spreading all over the world. So he said, who is actually the associate of Lord Chaitanya? Then the other point, because the Kama Mimamsa philosophy, we all know what that means. The idea is that, you know, Kama Mimamsa is atheism. It just means that if you do some work, there'll be a result. There has to be. Anybody does anything, it's like the law of action and reaction. You know, if you do something, there'll be a reaction to it. So if you do some work, there'll be some product from that work. So even if God exists, then he's obliged to provide you with the results of that work that you performed. In other words, work is God, that's all. You do something, you get a reaction, or you get a result. So if you chant 64 rounds, Krishna automatically gives you Krishna pride. Prabhupada said that is Kama Mimamsa. Yeah. As God is obliged to give you prime because you're chanting 64 rounds. So even if you chant hundreds of rounds every day, Krishna doesn't have to give you anything. You know, that's entirely up to him. And then finally, this point at the end there about him asking Prabhupada. Now he's just rejected Srila Prabhupada and he's rejected Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada's guru. And then he's asking him for his blessings so that he can advance more and more. Yeah. So then, now one might say, well, why did Prabhupada say, yes, I bless you, you shall never advance? You know, that doesn't sound like a saintly person would react that way. All right, he's rejected him. So, but why curse him practically? So the answer is, of course, Prabhupada had had in the past one or two disciples that had left him for various reasons. He never protested, all right, you know, you do whatever you want to do. He never rejected them. So why did he say that about Nittai? The answer is, of course, because he was insulting his spiritual master. Prabhupada would quite prepared to accept somebody insulting himself. It didn't disturb him at all. But he wasn't going to sit there and hear him insult his spiritual master in that way. So that was his response. And again, I had read on Nittai's website a few years ago. It's not there now. He took it off. But in his little bio, he had explained how he had once been a disciple of Bhaktivedanta Swami of the Hare Krishna movement. And then he said, but then later on I gave it up for this reason and that reason. And then he had a paragraph there. He said, well, actually, he said sometimes, he said the whole thing about Krishna consciousness and the stories of the Bhagavatam just seemed like some big illusion. That's all. Like some fairy tale or something. Sometimes I think that maybe it's true, and then sometimes I think it's not. So this is the condition the man's in there. Yeah. He's lost everything. And apparently Prabhupada did tell, I think, Jayapataka Maharaj later on, that he said that Nittai will not go back to Godhead for many kalpas of births. A kalpa means 1,000 cycles of yugas. So that's, anyway, Nittai Das, that's his situation. So, a little bit more. Then anyway, all of that was going on in Prabhupada's room. September the 16th, then Prabhupada was giving a class. And he was speaking about Ashwatthama, that section where he throws the Brahmastra and Arjuna has to counteract it. This was from the first canto, chapter 7. So speaking about the power of sound naturally led Prabhupada to speak about the ultimate mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So he said, if on the material platform or mental platform the mantra can act so wonderfully, then how much spiritually the mantra can benefit you? You simply have to imagine. So this Hare Krishna mantra is completely spiritual. If you chant it, spiritually enlivened, then surely it will act. Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. It will act. Therefore the chanting is so important. There's no difference between Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and His holy name, Krishna. It requires good brain to understand how Krishna can appear in a form which can be seen by us, or Krishna can appear in a form of sound which we can hear. It is for our benefit. So you should immediately see that Sankirtan, Hare Krishna, is Krishna and Radha, Hara and Krishna, Radha Krishna, or Sitaram, or Lakshmi Narayan, or any form of the Lord Vishnu. Hare Krishna means the Supreme Lord and His spiritual potency. So we address Hare, oh the energy, spiritual energy of the Lord, and Krishna, oh the Supreme Lord. Hare Rama, it's the same thing. So what is the meaning of addressing Hey Krishna, Hey Radhe, Hey Ram? Why? That just engage me in your service. So this is our prayer. It is not our prayer that, oh Krishna, oh Ram, you give me some money, give me some woman. No, that is not the prayer. Of course, in the neophyte stage, then they can pray like that, but that is not Sudha Bhakti or pure devotion. Pure devotion means to pray to the Lord, begging some service. Oh my Lord, kindly engage me in your service. That is the perfection of life, when one is engaged in the service of the Lord in love. So in discussing the chanting then, Prabhupada made a strong and not so veiled reference to Nittai. So you can become a very great saint and live in a secluded place and become puffed up that you will become a very great personality. And people may come and see him that, oh, he is not to be seen. He is engaged in chanting. My Guru Maharaj has condemned this. He said, Mana tumi kishara vaishnav. My dear mind, your mental concoction, you were thinking that you would become a very big Vaishnav. You do not do anything, and you sit down in a secluded place, and imitating Haridas Thakur, chanting. So, you are a nonsense. Why? Nirjanara Kari Pratisthana Tari. To get some cheap adoration, as a great chanter. Because if one is actually chanting, then why should he be attracted by woman and Bidhi? If he's actually in such a position, like Haridas Thakur, then why should he be attracted by material things? Then it is a false show only. So that is not possible for an ordinary person. Therefore, ordinary person must be physically engaged. That is not physical, but that is also transcendental. Always busy in some business of Krishna consciousness. That is wanted. Not that, oh, I have become a great scholar, and I have now learned how to become a great Vaishnav. I chant 64 rounds, and I think of my wife somewhere, and then goodbye to Govindaji, and leave Vrindavan. We all knew who he was referring to, and there was muted laughter amongst the devotees. With an ironic smile, Prabhupada went on, these rascaldom do not follow. Govindaji drives away such rascals from Vrindavan. So Vrindavan, one who is living in Vrindavan, he must be very anxious how to spread the glories of Vrindavan Chandra all over the world. That is wanted. Not that Vrindavan Chandra is my private property and sit down in one place and lick up. No, that is not wanted. That is condemned by my Guru Maharaj. He says, what kind of Vaishnav, rascal, you are? Simply for cheap adoration, you are living in a secluded place. Tavahari Nama Kevala Kaitava. Your chanting of the so-called Hare Krishna mantra is simply cheating. He has said that. So one must be ready to preach very vigorously. And as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's also, it is his order. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never said, you chant. He has given certainly the chanting, but so far as mission is concerned, he said, every one of you become a guru. Amara Agaya Guru Hanatara Aidash. And deliver, preach, that people may understand what is Krishna. Prativa Chaya Chajato Nagaradi. So that is his mission. It is not that, oh, become a big Vaishnav and sit down and imitate. That is all rascaldom. So don't follow this thing. At least we cannot advise you in that way. We have learnt from our Guru Maharaj that preaching is very, very important. And when one is actually an experienced preacher, then he is able to chant the Hare Krishna mantra without any offense. Before that, this so-called chanting of Hare Krishna mantra, so you may practice without any offenses and giving up other business to make a show of big Vaishnav, that is not required. Thank you very much. So Srila Prabhupada had spoken about Nittai's deviation in private to just a few of us, but his public criticism this morning left no doubt in the devotees' minds as to what the real Siddhanta is and the standard of practice. Then there were a couple of references to Nittai later on. That was, of course, September. Then he, you know, he was gone. We never saw him again. Later on, Prabhupada went back to Mayapur in 1977 in February. So again, he was giving a class. This was on the 7th canto, chapter 9, verse 5. And he was talking more about the standards of devotion. So he said, if you want to understand Krishna, it's only through bhakti. Neither knowledge or yoga or karma or jnana, nothing. Nothing will help you. Simply a devotee. And how to become a devotee? How easy it is? See here, Prahlad Maharaj is an innocent child, simply offering his obeisances. And Krishna is also asking you, Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto Madjaji Mam Namaskaru. If you simply do these four items, always think of Krishna. So, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this is thinking of Krishna, Manmana. And you can stick to this principle of the Hare Krishna mantra if you are an unalloyed devotee. Without being unalloyed devotee, it is very difficult. It will be tiresome. But we shall practice. Abhyasa yoga yuktena. Immediately we cannot be a first class devotee. We cannot imitate Haridas Thakur. That is not possible. But minimum. Sankhya Purvakanama Gana Nati B. We have to practice. Certain numerical strength we must maintain. And we have made it, therefore, So some of our so-called devotees, they have criticized me that I have limited only 16 rounds. No, why 16 rounds? You can make 300 rounds, but the minimum 16 rounds, because we are not accustomed to devote so much time. So we must be busy always. But to sit down in one place and chant the Hare Krishna mantra continuously, that is not possible for any conditioned soul, unless he is liberated. So don't try to imitate. My Guru Maharaj is strictly forbidden. Don't try to imitate the big personalities like Haridas Thakur, Rupa Goswami. He used to say, Rupa Goswami ke moga vancha. Rupa Goswami, because he was putting on a loincloth, chakraturna mashesha mandala patishrenim sada tuchavat bhutva dina ganeshiko karunaya kopina kanta. So there is no use in imitating Rupa Goswami, to imitate the dress, and then as soon as there's some opportunity, smoking bidis. So don't do this nonsense. This is no use, imitation. Anusharan, not Anukaran. Anukaran is dangerous. Anusharan means following. So following, but not imitating. Sadhu Maganaru Gamanam, this is bhakti. That we shall try to follow the footsteps of the big, big devotees, sadhus. We shall try to follow, but don't try to imitate. That is very dangerous. So some of our devotees, they have left. Oh, there is no bhajan here. Someone asking me my blessings to find out another guru. So he wants my blessings to find out a guru. So this rascaldom is no good. So that was a punchline on... on Nittai, finding out the blessings of his guru to find another guru. Complete nonsense. Okay, so anyway, that's a bit about 16 rounds there. As you can see, Prabhupada stressed at least that minimum. If you want to do more, do more. But then, you know, it actually requires that one become very qualified before he can actually just sit down and chant Hare Krishna and make that his main occupation. And there was in fact a couple of examples of devotees that attempted to do that even during Prabhupada's time. One of them was Sharmadas. He was a black American devotee who had gone to serve in Africa. So he had some... There was a lot of difficulties in the African Yatra in 75, some disturbances in the management. So Sharmadas, he decided that he didn't want to stay there anymore. It was distracting him from his real business of chanting. So he had turned up and in Vrindavan when Prabhupada was there at Janmashtami in 75. And he was complaining about, you know, what was happening there. And he said, I just want to chant. I just want to chant. And he was already chanting, you know, I don't know, so many rounds every day. So because of his insistence, then Prabhupada gave him his blessings to go and live in Mayapur and chant Hare Krishna. So that was like September, October time. So then later the next year, January 17, Prabhupada arrived in Mayapur for 2 months. Up to the Gopurnima festival. So February the 25th then, there was a conversation, it turned to Sharmadas. So at the present, he's living in the Goshala, he's chanting 150 rounds a day, and eating only the remnants of the foodstuffs left by the other devotees. Recently, he came to see Srila Prabhupada to get permission to build a tree hut to live in, so that he could avoid seeing anyone. He complained that he was being disturbed by the, because the devotees were coming to see him and interrupting his chanting. So he wanted to live in a tree hut. But Prabhupada condemned his idea, which he said was living like a monkey. He said that Sharma's so-called renunciation was actually only another form of sense gratification. It was also based on selfish interest, even if it was only a small display of it. Prabhupada gave the example of two thieves, one who steals a diamond and the other who steals a cucumber. Prabhupada explained that simply because one steals in a small way, it does not mean that he is not a thief. Jayapataka Swami asked if Grihastha life was meant for the one who steals cucumbers. Prabhupada laughed. He said, yes, Krishna is giving allowance for stealing cucumber. Prabhupada conceded that at least Sharma wasn't doing anything bad, but he said that active service is better. Prabhupada is not displeased with him because something is better than nothing. He allowed him to stay here because if he leaves, he said, he may end up going elsewhere to practice something other than Krishna consciousness. So, you know, that was, it was, in other words, it was a selfish concern. He wants to chant 150 rounds a day, but he can't cope with anybody else. He doesn't want to, you know, communicate with anybody else. He wants to live in a tree and like this. It means it's all for his own, you know, selfish interest. But it's Krishna conscious. It's dovetailed. So anyway, then a week later, on March the 8th, Sharmadas came over from his hideaway at the Gaushala at 4 p.m. to see Srila Prabhupada with a request to leave Mayapur. He wants to go and chant at Radhakund. With so many devotees now coming for the festival, he complained that he is again being disturbed in his chanting. Prabhupada told him that this indicated that his mind was restless. Previously, he had asked to live in a tree, and now Radhakund. You are not fit for Nirjana Bhajan, Prabhupada told him. This is for the Mahabhagwats, like Haridas Thakur, who were completely undisturbed. Haridas Thakur was living in a cave with a large snake, but he was not perturbed. He added that if one's mind is even a little disturbed, Nirjana Bhajan will not be possible. After this meeting, Sharma Prabhu later told Pushtakrishna Swami that he had decided to return to Africa and preach. And Prabhupada was pleased to hear this. So that's all we heard from Sharma for a few months. And then in late September, when Prabhupada was back in Vrindavan, then he got a letter from him. So this letter was, Prabhupada got it on September the 27th. So in his letter, it was sent from Nairobi. He again requested permission to make chanting his main service, saying that he didn't want to act whimsically and that he only wanted to please Srila Prabhupada. He declared, we have no love for Krishna, but we have this attraction to serve Krishna as a servant of the confidential serving maids of Krishna. By your mercy, we understand that we cannot go to Vrindavan by any ticket. So we are, by the grace of Krishna, trying to fix our mind on this service in Vrindavan. This fixing of the mind is dependent on my chanting Krishna names. And my chanting Krishna names is simply dependent on your mercy, because my godbrothers do not like me chanting. We do not want to commit offenses to our godbrothers, yet sometimes when I tell them that I only want to chant, I only want to hear about Krishna in Vrindavan, or the glories of his holy names or qualities, some say we must talk of other things. They are more pure than my sinful self. As far as this living entity, he only wants to hear or talk of Krishna. My godbrothers, as far as I am concerned, are better or more advanced. But because of my sinful condition, if you will allow me to chant these few extra rounds, read your books, and render some small service, then maybe before leaving this body, Krishna will allow this sinful living entity to be elevated to the position of one of his loving servants. It is our only desire to have our devotional kripa take shelter of Goloka Vrindavan and to somehow or another please our spiritual master and Krishna. So Prabhupada's reply to him was quite terse. So, why did you leave Mayapur if you were so expert in chanting? Read my books and do some menial service. But why have you left Mayapur? You were restless, so what can be done? You were chanting in Mayapur. So wherever you may live, you have to abide by the order of the authority. Because you were restless, you were not fit for chanting absolutely. So that was it. That was the last we heard of Sharma. And to this day, I actually haven't heard what happened to him. I think he just, you know, he left Africa, but that was it. We don't know what happened. Anyway, it was interesting. If you see that letter, he's talking there about becoming the servant of the confidential maidservants of Krishna, only thinking about Krishna in Vrindavan, meditating on Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. So I think from that, it's likely that he had, you know, gotten some information about, you know, these different processes that some of the Babajis follow there, you know, about meditating on the eight different past, you know, times of the day in Vrindavan, blah, blah, blah. So Prabhupada obviously knew about all those things, and therefore he wasn't very accommodating in his reply. You know, his point was simply this, that your mind is restless, you cannot sit down and chant. You were in Mayapur already doing that, but you were restless, you wanted to leave. Now again, you want to leave. So that means your mind's not fixed up. So if your mind's not fixed up, then you can't chant absolutely like that. So it's a, you know, it's a good point that unless one is actually qualified, even if you have that kind of sentiment to do lots of chanting, but you won't be able to actually do it. It requires a very purified state, you know, of mind. Now there was another example of this also that came up when we arrived in Mayapur in 1976. And that was another devotee who was not there, who was supposed to have been there. So in 1975, there was this devotee, Adalami, and he had come to Srila Prabhupada, and he had told Prabhupada that I've just been to the doctor. The doctor says that I'm going to die within a couple of months. I've got this terminal illness. And so now all I want to do is just retire and chant Hare Krishna until I die. So he pressured Srila Prabhupada into actually giving him Babaji initiation. And as far as I know, he's the only disciple of Srila Prabhupada who got Babaji initiation. So he was initiated on July the 5th in 1975, I think in Chicago. And then Prabhupada gave him his blessings. All right, now go off. You make your only business to chant Hare Krishna in Mayapur. And, you know, you stay there until you die. So then, now, Prabhupada came to Mayapur himself in January of 76, and there's no Adalami. So Prabhupada mentioned another wayward disciple. This was on February the 4th, named Adalami, who had been told by doctors that he would die within a few months. He asked to be given Babaji initiation. Prabhupada reluctantly had agreed, and this Adalami Maharaj had come to spend his last days in Mayapur chanting Hare Krishna. But then when another doctor informed him that he would not die so soon, he immediately left Mayapur, went back to his wife in the USA, gave up his devotional service, and became like a Kami again. He was last seen surfing on the West Coast. So, you know, artificially you can't do these things. You know, somebody tells you you're going to die, oh, and I have to chant like that. But if you're not actually, you know, qualified, it's better to just work yourself to death, you know, than sit and try to artificially imitate Haridas Thakur. It doesn't work. And the end result is that because it's a pretense, of course, then, you know, you get the opposite result, actually. You know, you end up going away. So, anyway, therefore, Prabhupada always stressed, you know, work your way up. As he said previously there, that I quoted there, that Prabhupada said, first you go out and preach. When you become very expert in preaching, then actually you acquire the adhikar to be able to chant. So again, Prabhupada was in Aligarh on October the 9th, 1976. He'd just gone there for 2 days. He was staying at the house of Mr. Surendra Kumar Saigal. He was a wealthy man. He owned this company called Tiger Locks. Yeah, they make brass locks and all these kinds of things. Aligarh is a well-known center for all this brass work, brass castings and things like this. It's only an hour from Vrindavan. So he had invited Prabhupada to come and do 2 days of programs in his home. He had like a big estate, about 4 or 5 acres, and a big old colonial style house. And so Prabhupada was, you know, staying there for 2 days. In the afternoon when we arrived, then he went out onto the lawns, and he was having like an impromptu darshan. So, laughing along with his audience, Prabhupada returned to his point. So everybody can be raised to the platform of Krishna consciousness. There is no difficulty. That is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. So early in the morning, he is teaching, Udila Aruna Purava Bhage Dwijamani Gora Amani Jagi. When the rising sun appears in the east, the jewel of the twice-born, Lord Gaurasundara, awakened. So he was not lazy. He was very busy from early in the morning. So if we at least pretend to follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we cannot sleep. We must rise early in the morning. One must get up at least 1.5 hours before the sunrise. That is Mangalarati. Mangalarati means to get up early in the morning, take your bath, and be prepared for the Mangalarati. Then begin your chanting or prayer. So this is activity. So Prabhupada told us about an exchange that he had had in the 1940s with a man who had challenged him that Vaishnavas were lazy fellows. He chuckled as he recounted the conversation. So I said, you have never seen a Vaishnav. No, I have seen these Vaishnavs. They do not do anything and taking mala and pretending to be very highly elevated and sleep and snore. But you have not seen. You might have seen these pseudo Vaishnavs, but the real Vaishnav you have not seen. Oh, what is that real Vaishnav? So I said that in India there were two big wars. One war was the Ram Ravana, and the other war, Kurukshetra. So in these two wars, the hero is a Vaishnav. One is Hanuman, and the other one is Arjuna. Have you seen them? Have you heard about them? Are they lazy fellows? Hanuman is a Vaishnav. He could raise one mountain and jump over the sea and set fire to the very beautiful state of Ravana. That is a Vaishnav. And Arjuna, he was in the beginning, he was hesitating. Oh, my cousin brothers, they're on the other side. But then he decided, yes, I shall fight. And Krishna had inquired from him, now I have instructed you, now whatever you like you can do, and what is your decision? Then he clearly said, yes, my decision is there, I'll fight. Karishye vachanam tava. As you have advised, so I have understood you want this fighting. So Vaishnav means, for the sake of Krishna, he can do anything. He is not this lazy fellow, showing, oh, I have become a very big Vaishnav, now let me sleep under the name of chanting Hare Krishna. Faithful servant means always alert, and that is bhakti. Anulkulyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Uttama. Simply one has to execute Anulkulyena, how Krishna is satisfied, and that is bhakti. Prabhupada stressed that neither Hanuman, a monkey, nor Arjuna, a warrior, were told by the Lord to give up their occupational duties to sleep and snore and become a great devotee. No, he never says, Prabhupada told us. He said, you are attached to this kind of work? All right, you do it. But the result that you give to me, that is bhakti. Arjuna, you're a military man? All right, I ask you to fight. You become a fighter and become my devotee. Bhaktosi priyosi me. Just see. What is that? He wasn't chanting Hare Krishna. But Krishna says, Bhaktosi priyosi me. You are my very dear friend and my devotee. Prabhupada made it clear that he wasn't speaking against sitting down and chanting, but one has to be qualified to do that. Of course, he said, the ultimate is to be always absorbed in glorifying the Lord, but not in the beginning. In the beginning, you must work very hard. You come to the stage of pure devotional platform. Then you can fully engage yourself in meditation or chanting. Not in the beginning. In the beginning, you should be very expert and active. That is wanted. That is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Udilo. From early in the morning, active. Come on, chant. Come with me and others will see. If we make a party, chanting Hare Krishna. So in the beginning, they may be disturbed because they have become accustomed to sleep up until 9 o'clock. But then they will hear and gradually they'll become purified. And then they'll receive it. So that was Prabhupada's principle. In the beginning, you have to be very expert and active, always engaged. Then eventually you may come to that point of being able to actually sit down and chant properly. And again, Prabhupada mentioned on April the 8th in 1976 in Vrindavan, he was giving his class he explained what is required of us if we want to please Krishna and get his blessings. He said, we have to surrender. That will please Krishna. And without pleasing him, then you cannot see Krishna. You may have your eyes, big, big eyes, but you cannot see Krishna. You have to please him. And that pleasing activity is bhakti. Without bhakti, it means sitting down silently. No, I'm chanting. I do not want to go out. I'm busy. This means excuse. What will you chant? You'll think of money and women, that's all. You just work. Go out and sell books and work hard. That is wanted. Therefore, we do not give that opportunity. My Guru Maharaj did not give this opportunity, and we are following the same example. No opportunity of sitting idle. No, you must work. That will rectify. Yes. So, there you go. Of course, most of that audience there, they were all devotees from the West. They'd come over, they were the Sankirtan devotees. So Prabhupada's saying that. Go out and sell books. Work hard. Then gradually you'll come to the point where you can chant Hare Krishna continuously. So that's a few things there about chanting extra rounds. Of course, there was part of our sadhana, at least in the early days with Prabhupada, was that we did sometimes chant extra rounds, and that was on a codices. It was pretty well the standard practice that on a codice, everybody would chant 25 rounds. So that came up as a topic when we were in Mayapur. This was February the 11th. There'd been some talk about observing fasts. Prabhupada had listed some of the different fast days and how long one should fast for. So then Tamal Krishna also asked about chanting while observing a codicy. We should always chant 25 rounds on a codicy if initiated, he asked. Initiated, Prabhupada said. Everyone. Why initiated? So that should be the standard for our movement on a codicy day, then Tamal asked. Standard is 16, Prabhupada said, but if one can chant more, then he is welcome. Tamal Krishna pressed to know if 25 rounds was mandatory or not. When Jayapataka Maharaj suggested that it was recommended, Prabhupada seemed to disagree. No, a codicy means that, fasting and chanting. However, when Tamal Krishna Maharaj referred to his men, they were, because that he was in charge of the Radha Damodar traveling Sankirtan party, to his men going out on book distribution, Prabhupada was quick to clarify. No, that is also preaching work, so for that purpose you can stop this. But generally, one who has no preaching work, he can chant extra. So, 16 rounds and 25 on a codicy, if you can. I had a little discussion with Bhakti Vikash Maharaj about this, business of chanting 64 rounds. He's been doing quite a bit of research on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and I think he's coming out this year with a book about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. So he told me he'd done some research, into what was actually the standard for chanting in the Gaudiya Mat. And as far as he could ascertain, the standard was that everybody was expected to chant 64 rounds. But if somebody was going out and preaching all day, then they were allowed to do less. But the devotees that were back at the temple all the time, they were supposed to chant 64 rounds. But he said, one time somebody came and he complained to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta that, your disciples are supposed to chant 64 rounds, but I see so many of them are not chanting 64 rounds, they're just working. And apparently Bhaktisiddhanta had replied, no, they are chanting 64 rounds. He said, I see they're chanting 64 rounds. You don't see they're chanting 64 rounds? So the implication there was that, by their work, he considered that to be chanting. Anyway, we'll see what Maharaj comes out with, Bhakti Vikash Maharaj, when that book comes out. There'll be some further information about that there. But the point that Prabhupada was making is that you have to be very active. Yeah. And, because sometimes, he mentioned there about sitting and snoring and becoming a great devotee. So, I had my own little experience about that, just after I joined Prabhupada's party. I'd been with him about 3 or 4 weeks at that point. And one of the things, of course, with being with Prabhupada was that, you know, you were literally living in the room next to his most of the time. So, you know, I learned very quickly that you can't chant your rounds very loudly because it would disturb Srila Prabhupada, so I had to learn how to chant, you know, fairly silently. So this particular occasion we were in Bombay. In those days Prabhupada's quarters were at the back of Hare Krishna land. Of course nowadays they're in the top of the big tower. But in the beginning, before they built the main temple, there were 6 apartment blocks. And each one of those apartment blocks, when they moved on, was occupied. Every apartment had a tenant. So Prabhupada then, he had an extra floor built on the top of each apartment block. And the one at the back of the land, that was reserved for Srila Prabhupada. On one side there was Prabhupada's apartment, and on the other side there was an apartment for his secretaries and servants. So in the night time, after giving Prabhupada his evening massage, then we'd exit from Prabhupada's flat and go and sleep in, you know, the servant's flat. So then in the first thing in the morning then, about 4:30, 5 o'clock, we'd get up, and then I'd go into Prabhupada's quarters. So when you went in, there was a small reception room. And then going off from that, there was Prabhupada's darshan room. And in that room also, there was like a cubicle. And that had the toilet. And then outside of that cubicle, in the room, there was a small sink. So Prabhupada would come out from his darshan room after he'd finished his translation work in the night time. And then he would brush his teeth in the sink. You know, wash his face and get ready for going out on his morning walk. So I'd come into the room and I'd sit down and wait for Prabhupada to come, you know, out of his darshan room. So anyway, this particular morning on the 19th of December, Prabhupada came to brush his teeth in the sink, but I failed to notice him because I was nodding asleep as I chanted. So Prabhupada wasn't angry, but he told me, "Do not sit while you are chanting. Sitting means sleeping." Oh, that was a little mantra that I kind of learnt. Sitting means sleeping. I still do it, unfortunately, and I see so many devotees do. And, you know, because it's a feature in many temples. When I first joined the Sydney Temple in 1972, it was one of the duties of the temple commander that in japa time, because everybody would sit in the temple room, so the temple commander would walk around, and then every so often he would hear this whack, like this. He'd hit somebody over the head with his bead bag to wake them up, because they were, you know, they got heads down chanting their japa, and he walked past, whack, like this, and wake them up again. Anyway, sitting means sleeping. So, yeah, it's a little difficult sometimes. And that was my own experience. I had to be very careful. And actually, it was a fact that sometimes previous secretaries and servants had had problems because they didn't get their rounds done properly. And then gradually, after some time, they'd end up, you know, leaving because they'd start to see Prabhupada in a mundane way. And a lot of the time, the problem was because they just weren't chanting their rounds properly. We had one secretary that joined Prabhupada's party. He lasted 4 months. And then after leaving the party, after a couple of months, then he left ISKCON also. He gave up his active service and gave up being a sannyasi. And the reason why was because he was only chanting 2 rounds a day. So, you know, he was kind of basically working on the strength of his intelligence rather than, you know, his transcendental inspiration. So naturally he had problems. So you have to be very careful. And Prabhupada mentions, of course, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that the personal servants of the Guru and the deities have to be very, very careful because, you know, there's opportunity to make a lot of advancement in that situation, but there's also a lot of opportunity to make a lot of offenses as well. And therefore, it's advised, you know, if you come close to the fire, if you don't know how to handle it, then stay away. It's better to be at a distance than to come very close unless you know how to handle the situation properly. Okay, one other example of sleeping, or not sleeping rather. I had a little experience one time when I was able to actually conquer sleeping by chanting. So this was during Prabhupada's evening massage. Now when I first joined the party, Upendra had shown me how to do Prabhupada's massage. I'd gone in, you know, with Upendra into the bedroom. That was in Bengali markets. And Prabhupada's bed at that time was just one of those little charpoys. It's like a wooden frame thing with string across it and a mattress on it. And so the bed was small. Just Prabhupada would lie on the bed, and then you had to stand at the side of him and massage him just from the waist down. So the evening massage, that was a dry massage, and Prabhupada would be fully clothed, and it would just be, you know, his legs and feet. And that was mainly just to aid his circulation, because after a whole day practically of sitting down, then naturally, you know, he'd get some numbness. And I think he used to get a bit of numbness in his left hip. So we'd work on that. And the first night that I went in with Upendra, he was, you know, standing there massaging Prabhupada. And he was telling me, he said, now, when you do this massage, he said, Prabhupada, you know, will very often fall asleep. So he said, the first time I did it, he said, Prabhupada fell asleep, so I thought, okay, you know, I should stop now. So he said, I was just going out the door, and then Prabhupada's voice came out of the darkness, oh, you were finished? So he said, then I had to come back and continue. So he said, you can't stop until Prabhupada tells you to stop. So even if he falls asleep, you have to keep on going. And you have to just wait until he wakes up and tells you. So that particular night, anyway, after 10 minutes, Prabhupada was lying there and he just, And that was it. That was the signal. All right, stop. And we went out. So I thought, you know, this looks pretty easy. You know, the noonday massage, that was an hour and a half with oil. It was a real workout. Prabhupada really liked, you know, a very strong massage. But I thought 10 minutes, you know, no problem. Later on, that evening massage became the most difficult part of the service, because when we got to Mayapur about 4 months later, Prabhupada started, you know, having massages. They went from about half an hour, then it became an hour, then it became an hour and a half, and then on this particular occasion it was 2 hours, you know, just sitting there. And of course in Mayapur the bed was big, so you were able to get up on the bed and sit on the bed with Prabhupada. He'd be lying down, you'd sit next to him. And you know, the whole place was set up. We would go in the evening and we'd put this huge net over Prabhupada's bed, like a big tent, mosquito net. And then we had this devotee, Anantaram Shastri. He would come in the evenings and he would do this puja, you know, to keep out the ghosts and everything. He'd come just at dusk and he'd have this big bowl of frankincense and a fan, and he'd have a conch. He'd blow the conch, and he had this ability. He could suck air in through his nose and blow it out through his mouth at the same time. And so he, you know, when he blew the conch shell, he would do it in such a way he could keep it going for like 5 minutes or even 10 minutes at a time, as long as you wanted. He'd just keep it going continuously because he could keep the airflow going. So he'd go around at dusk and, you know, he'd blow the conch to scare away all the ghosts, and he'd chant all these mantras, and then he would fan like this, and big clouds of incense, frankincense smoke, would billow out, and that would act as a kind of a mosquito repellent as well, because all the mosquitoes, you know, they become active at dawn and at dusk, you'll see them. So the system in India, you see in the villages still, just at dusk you'll see lots of houses with smoke billowing out the windows, because they, you know, they deliberately do that to keep the mozzies out. So Prabhupada's room similarly would get fumigated like this. So, you know, in the evenings then, when Prabhupada took rest, then, you know, of course, 10 o'clock at night, Everybody else was asleep. The lights would go out. You know, the room would be thick with this, you know, fragrant smoke. You'd be sitting underneath this mosquito net, no breeze. You'd be sweating away. And Prabhupada would be asleep. He'd fall asleep. He'd be, you know, snoozing a little bit. And there you are by yourself with just your own mind for company. And, you know, you had to stay there until Prabhupada woke up and told you to go. So, it was getting very difficult. And, you know, sometimes you'd kind of get the nods. You know, been up since 4 o'clock in the morning. Now it's 11 or midnight, you know. And you'd have to do this service. So it got quite, you know, quite interesting trying to stay awake. It was always a battle every night, you know, how to, you know, stop yourself from nodding off. And sometimes you would nod off. And, you know, you just be sitting there kind of hanging over. And then all of a sudden you wake up again. And you wouldn't know whether you'd been out for 5 seconds or 5 minutes or 15 minutes. Or it could have been any time, you know. So anyway, I was trying to figure out how to stay awake. So I devised this method one time. So I actually managed to do it one night. So this was on March the 1st, 1976. Evening massage is also becoming difficult to perform. It's been getting increasingly longer each night. Each evening after the pujaris fumigate Prabhupada's bedroom with incense to drive out the mosquitoes, Anakadundabi Das and I drape a large net around the bed. When Prabhupada lies down to take rest about 10 p.m, the lights go out. I slip under the net and perch cross-legged at his side to massage up and down his legs and feet as he softly slumbers. Previously, the massage had been lasting about half an hour or 45 minutes. But here in Mayapur, the sessions had been going on for an hour or longer. Tonight it went on for over 2 hours, the longest ever, and I left Prabhupada's room just after midnight. I find it very difficult to sit in the dark, sweating under the mosquito net, breathing air thick with incense smoke, with no breeze for relief, and with no sound except Prabhupada's soft snoring. It's difficult to stay awake on the job. Occasionally I do drift off, only to snap suddenly back to consciousness, without knowing how long I'd been out. But tonight, by Krishna's grace, I was able to stay awake by chanting slokas within my mind. I remembered in the Gita, Krishna had called Arjuna Gudikesh, conqueror of sleep. So my little experience is giving me a glimpse of what a high degree of sense control is required to earn that title of Gudikesh. So somehow or another, I managed to stay awake the whole session for 2 hours, because in those days I used to know a few slokas, about 150 or 200. So I just thought, I'll sit and I'll just chant all, you know, the whole time. So whatever I could remember, I was just chanting them over and over again in my mind. And I actually managed to stay awake. But I think that was the only night that I managed to do it. The rest of the time, you know, you get the nods. Okay, so that's a little bit then about chanting 16 rounds, chanting more than 16 rounds, and of course, you know, not sleeping and snoring while chanting. So it's 9 o'clock. We'll finish at this point. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Managing. Right, well, I can't say for sure what the standards in the Gaudiya Mat are nowadays. As I said, according to Bhakti Vikash Maharaj, he's, you know, the information he found out was that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you know, wanted 64 rounds as the ideal. But if they were engaged in, you know, preaching work and stuff, then he would allow them to chant less. Now, I do have a couple of quotes, actually, about Srila Prabhupada's chanting. According to some of his godbrothers, I skipped them yesterday, but I'll read them now because it's kind of a couple of little observations. Where are we? Okay, now Shrutakirti Prabhu, of course he was, you know, with Prabhupada probably the longest of any of his servants. He mentions in his new book, What is the Difficulty? He says that it's easy to understand that Prabhupada enjoyed chanting japa. He always stressed the importance of our chanting our 16 rounds. He once told me that as a householder, he used a simple process for completing 16 rounds that we could apply. When I was a householder, he said, I would chant 4 rounds before each meal and 4 rounds before retiring in the evening. In this way, 16 rounds can be chanted without difficulty. He laughed and said, if you don't take your prasadam until you've chanted your 4 rounds, then you'll be sure to get them done. So, you know, 3 meals a day, and if your determination is that you have to chant your 4 rounds before you sit and eat, nobody's going to miss their meals. Right? We miss so many other things, but we never miss prasadam. So if you make your determination, all right, you know, I won't eat until I've chanted my 4 rounds, then you'll always get your rounds done. So that was something that Prabhupada told him, that he was chanting 16 rounds when he was a householder, because Prabhupada was a businessman. He had so many different things that he had to do. So now another quote that I had found was from a godbrother of Prabhupada's, and no, I've just lost it. This was from a devotee called Nayananda Das Babaji. He just left his body a couple of years ago, at the age of about 92 or 93 or something like that. So he recounted in a book that was put out by my god sister Mula Prakriti Dasi. She wrote this, well, she didn't write it, but she compiled a book of interviews that she'd done with different people that knew Prabhupada before he came to the West. So that book is called Our Srila Prabhupada, A Friend to Everyone. So she had interviewed Nayananda Das Babaji, and he had recalled, he said that as far as I understood, Sri Abhay Charanaravinda Prabhu, from when he first met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and especially later, he kept the highest standards. So even though he hadn't requested formal initiation, we saw that he was chanting 64 rounds a day. This was during all the time that he was working full-time in his business. Whenever we met him, he was daily chanting and counting 1 lakh of names. When he got off time from work, he would immediately go and associate with the different devotees in the Gaudiya Mat. He would go to Bagh Bazaar, or he would also go by train to Nabadweep and Mayapur. Now, there's a little, because when you're hearing people's recollections from, you know, 50 years ago or 60 years ago, you have to, you know, kind of give a, what do they say, you know, you take things with a pinch of salt, right? They're not necessarily going to be completely accurate. But at least his impression was that Prabhupada was chanting 64 rounds a day. Now, Prabhupada told Shrutakirti that when he was a householder, he was doing 16 rounds a day. Maybe because he was doing 4 rounds, 4 rounds, 4 rounds, it gave the impression that he was chanting all day long. I don't know. Or it could also be, because he mentions there that Prabhupada was going to Bagh Bazaar, and also to Navadweep. to the Chaitanya mat there. Now that would have been, you know, clearly in the 1940s, because in the 20s and 30s, Prabhupada was living in Allahabad. So he obviously wasn't going, you know, in the evenings, he wasn't going all the way from Allahabad to Calcutta or to Mayapur. So if he was, when he got spare time, if he was going to the Gaudiya Mats at Mayapur or in Calcutta, it's likely that that was in the 40s when Prabhupada was back in Calcutta and he was living at Sitakata Banerjee Lane. So it may be that maybe, you know, Prabhupada had spells when he was doing a lot of chanting like that. He retired from his family life in the 1950s. So, you know, when he was living in Jhansi alone, it may be quite likely that he was chanting, you know, 64 rounds throughout that period. But certainly when he, you know, started ISKCON, as soon as the society started expanding, you know, he just, there was not enough time to do that. So, as I said, my observation was that he was doing not less than 16, maybe more on occasions, but at least that number he was, you know, doing it because that was what he set for the stand for ISKCON. Does that? All right. Okay. Any other questions? No. Yes, Prabhu.
You were making the point that Prabhupada said that he was emphasizing more physical things to do rather than sitting by a monk place and chanting. And you mentioned specifically doing the sankirtan, but I'm just thinking, like, is sankirtan any less austere in the mind than, you know, than chanting Hare Krishna?
Well, I think it's a, you know, it's an individual thing to some extent, but in general, you know, Prabhupada tried to devise a program of daily sadhana that his disciples, you know, would be, you know, a little bit challenged by. You know, there has to be some austerity there. It's not, you know, that you become lazy and just, you know, whimsical. But at the same time, he didn't want to overburden us with a standard that we couldn't possibly keep up with either. So therefore, he devised this mixture. And it, you know, there's also, apart from doing things for our own advancement, we had to couple that with doing things for the advancement of others. That's Lord Chaitanya's movement, to go out and preach. So Prabhupada very cleverly combined personal sadhana with preaching. And he tried to strike a balance that he thought that, you know, most devotees would be able to keep up with, you know, that would help them to advance, doing a little bit of austerity, but at the same time wouldn't crush them and leave them disappointed, you know, that, oh, you know, this is impossible, and then just end up going away. So it's a mix. But, you know, of course, if somebody can do more or less, that's fine. But at least, but not less than 16, of course. But as he said, if you can do more, that's good. You know, then chant more. Fine. Is that all right? All right, so we'll finish at that point.